So in old inflation, we saw this problem that basically, although you can have a phase in which a double dot is positive, you cannot end in this phase. And this is sometimes called in the literature the graceful exit problem, in the sense that graceful in the sense that you want inflation, and you want also that the transition between inflation and hot FRW is smooth. You don't want to create these bubbles with large inhomogeneities. You want a smooth transition to the standard FRW evolution. So nowadays, what is considered by far the most compelling model of inflation is what is called slow roll inflation. Slow roll inflation is based on a very profound idea. So we said that if I have a potential which is completely flat, okay, so imagine that this is the zero of my energy, and I have a potential, and the potential energy is completely flat. If I'm sitting here, with the energy density. If I'm sitting here, I have a de Sitter evolution, and we said that it's okay. I have inflation, but this does not end. Clearly, I can imagine that instead of this, I can have this. I have a small tilt. Sorry, this is maybe a bit more. I have a small tilt, and so that I expect that if the tilt is small enough, in first approximation, I have, again, a vacuum energy, and I should have inflation. But then, as time goes on, the guy moves, the potential moves along its potential, and eventually something will happen, because I will the decrease in potential energy at a certain point will lead out of inflation. So this is the simple picture. To deform a bit the sitter with a small tilt in the potential in such a way that this the sitter phase is finite, it has an end. Okay, so in this case, instead of having an exact the sitter, I will have something which is close to the sitter, but with an end. Okay, so and so that's why what I was meaning with the sitter with the clock, because the metric will be very close to the one of the sitter, but now I have a scalar field which is moving, so this gives me preferred slices of constant time, or I mean that I can choose as constant time. So the scalar field acts like a clock which set when inflation is going to terminate eventually. So everything is so let's write down some formula. So we can start with the simplest Lagrangian of a scalar field with so clearly I have the kinetic term for gravity, the Einstein-Hilbert term, and then I have my kinetic term for my scalar phi, and then I have a potential term. So you may think that this is not the most generic thing that I can write down. So for sure, I can write down here a dependence on the scalar field, so some function f of phi in front of the kinetic term for gravity. This, as you probably know, and as we are going to do in the exercises this afternoon, you can always do a field redefinition in such a way that this function goes away and you come back to this form. So it's just a question of redefining in a proper way what I call the metric. So I can assume that this function is not there, because it can always be set to one by proper field redefinition. Another thing that you may think is that okay, maybe it's also relevant whether this scalar phi couples to our species. For example, imagine that all the standard model couples not to the metric, but to the metric times a function of a scalar. Okay, is it relevant? You may think that it's relevant, because at the end, photons they will follow the metric not the g, but g times this function, so maybe this is relevant. But again, you can prove in the exercises, you will see that this is not relevant. So if you want to solve the problems that I was discussing before, you really need inflation in Einstein frame. So Einstein frame is the situation in which I did the field definition in such a way that there is no function in front of the kinetic term of gravity. So to solve the problems that we were discussing, you need inflation defined like a double dot positive in this frame, in the frame in which there is no function of a scalar in front of the metric. So we can restrict to this form, we can forget about this function, and restrict to a very simple case. So clearly, you can modify this Lagrangian, you can add another field, you can think about a modified kinetic term, but this is clearly by far the simplest possibility. Okay, so then it's straightforward to write down what is the stress energy tensor of coming from this action with the usual definition. So the purpose would be to use these as a source in the Einstein equation and to find the conditions under which the universe accelerates. Okay, so this is the textbook expression for the stress energy tensor. In particular, the energy density rho is given, as you know, by this. I'm assuming that the evolution of the scalar is homogeneous, so I have only time dependence. We study perturbations later, but now I assume that there is only time dependence. So in this case, rho is given by this expression, and the pressure is given by this. Okay. So this is well known. Now, what do I need for this picture to work? Well, I need that, I probably erased somewhere, but I need the universe to accelerate, so I need rho plus 3p to be negative, okay? So, but for sure, if the kinetic term is small, okay, so that you're dominated by this potential energy, it's like being in the sitter, okay? So the potential energy make the universe accelerate if it is positive. So what I need to do is to have a phase of expansion when the kinetic energy of the field is small compared to the potential energy. Because if this is the case, I will accelerate. This is what we call a slow roll inflation. So a phase in which the kinetic energy of the field is much smaller than the potential energy. That is what we call a slow roll. And clearly, to solve the problems that I was discussing, I need this condition, not for an instant, because clearly this is not enough. I need this condition to go on for a while. We'll discuss for how long, but clearly it's not enough to set an initial condition such that this is true, because I need this to go on for many Hubble times for a while. Okay, so so the equation that I have to solve are very easy. So I have the equation of motion for the scalar, which is given by this. Again, I'm considering only homogeneous evolution, so I have no spatial gradients, coupled to the Friedmann equation, which let me write this. Okay. So these are the two equations that I have to solve. So this is just the Friedmann equation. So this is the total energy of the system, kinetic energy plus potential energy. And this is just the Klein-Gordon equation for the scalar field. The only things which changes with respect to flat space-time is this term, which is usually called the term of Hubble friction. But the origin of this term, I mean, physically, it's quite clear. So if you imagine to have, forget about the potential, imagine that I have only kinetic motion of the field. Given that the universe is expanding, I expect this energy to dilute, so this kinetic energy to dilute. In particular, I expect that every form of energy will follow this equation. And as we see from there, for the kinetic energy of the scalar as rho equal to p, so I expect this to go like a to minus 6 by this equation, this is 2, okay? So the kinetic energy of the scalar will evolve like a to minus 6. And indeed, so this is what happens here, because if we forget about the potential, phi dot goes like a minus 3, which implies this. So I'm just saying that you can think about the Hubble friction as the natural consequence of the fact that the kinetic energy of the scalar dilutes away as the universe expands. So it acts like something which stops, tries to stop, to diminish the kinetic energy of the scalar. Okay, so you have these two equations, and we have to solve them together, which is clearly very quite straightforward. And so let me start with a simple example. There. So let me start with the simple example in which the potential is just quadratic in the inflaton. And as always in physics, everything reduces to the harmonic oscillator. And again, this is the case also here. So let me consider the case in which the potential V is just quadratic in the inflaton. Okay. Notice that it's a nice example because you can do easily calculation, but it's also relevant because it's quite compatible with the data that we have so far. So it's a model that at the end could be also the correct one. So why not study in this case? So okay. So the equations are let me rewrite these equations in this particular case. Potential energy just becomes quadratic, and then I can use this explicit expression for H to plug back into the equation of motion for the scalar, and what I get is this equation. So let me study a bit this equation in various limits. Notice that there is no time dependence of explicit time dependence. So I can look at this equation, writing phi double dot as d phi dot over d phi times phi dot. Okay, so. So this gives an equation for, I want to draw some like phase diagram of this system using this equation. So I want to know, starting from various initial conditions, what happens for phi dot and phi in the evolution. Okay, let me cancel this. It's not very important. Okay, there are two various regimes that we can study. So first of all, let me restrict myself to a region which is a bit strange, when phi is much larger than the Planck scale. Okay, we'll come back a bit to this inequality in a minute, but let me restrict my analysis to this regime. Okay. Keeping this condition, there are two possibilities. So first of all, you can consider the case in which the kinetic energy is much bigger than the potential energy. This clearly is the opposite than the case we are interested in. So we are going in a regime which the kinetic energy is very large and dominates the potential energy. If you plug this inequality here, you see that this term can be dropped with respect to this. And using also this condition, also this term becomes small. So at the end, this equation just reduces in this regime to d phi dot over d phi equal to minus square root of 2 over m Planck times the absolute value of phi dot. Okay. So what this equation means, it means that the speed will redshift exponentially as a function of phi. Okay. So clearly you can integrate this, and you get that phi dot goes like e to the minus 3 over 2 over m Planck times phi. This means that if I start with a very large kinetic energy, the kinetic energy will drop exponentially as a function of phi. Okay. So this means that this condition can be true at the beginning, but exponentially the speed goes away, dilutes away. So I very very fastly I go out of this kinetic domination regime. Okay. So this is just to prove that. I get rid of velocity very very fast. Let me look at the other condition in which the potential energy is much larger than the kinetic energy. Okay, still remaining in this regime. In this case, this term can be dropped compared to this, but I cannot drop this term in general. So my equation. Reduces, I only have these two terms. And in particular, let me look for a solution in which d phi dot over d phi is equal to zero. This means that I'm looking for a solution in which the speed of the inflaton is constant as a function of phi. And this is possible if I balance, so I'm neglecting this term by this condition, if I compare these two terms. And I can balance them. In fact, you find that d phi dot over d phi is proportional to okay. So this means that this condition, the condition to have a constant speed of the inflaton, can be satisfied with the speed equal to this. Okay? But clearly, there are solutions which are symmetric in the sense I'm only looking at positive phi, but everything is clearly symmetric for phi and minus phi. So what we learn is that if we start with a too large kinetic energy, this will drop exponentially as a function of phi. If I start with a large a large potential energy compared to kinetic, I have a regime in which the speed of the inflaton goes to a constant, given by this expression. Clearly, during this phase, the universe inflates because as I said, the kinetic energy is given by is of order m squared m plus squared. And this is much smaller than the potential energy. Okay, because I'm assuming that phi is much larger than the Planck scale. So indeed, I am satisfying the Zwolle conditions. Okay, so if I look at what H is doing, I clearly will find that A double dot is positive, and I am inflating. So one can draw a diagram. I'm doing this because, I mean, for generic potentials, everything will be similar, although the details, the calculation are a bit more, I mean, they cannot be done explicitly, but the picture is qualitatively the same. So the picture is the following. So if I draw a diagram like phi dot, so the speed of the inflaton as a function of phi, so what I have here is, we said that there is a constant speed solution here. Notice that here the speed is negative because phi is positive. So what we are saying is that if I take this quadratic potential, I have a constant negative speed, okay, going towards the origin, so negative for positive phi. So clearly I have all the solution there by symmetry, in which the pull from the potential is balanced by the Hubble friction, okay? So there is a constant speed. You can check, so we said that if you start with too large kinetic energy, like in this phase, the kinetic energy will go away, so you will have trajectories doing like this, and then approaching this attractor. And the same here, the other side, okay? All these, so on the other end, if you are here, you walk towards the origin with constant velocity, so this extends to infinity. And this holds true until a value of order M Planck. Why? Well, if you look at this expression, no? So phi dot is constant given by this, more or less. So it's true that this is much smaller than the potential energy, but only until phi is much larger than the Planck scale. When I reach values of order the Planck scale, then these two will become comparable. The universe will stop accelerating because the kinetic energy is comparable to the potential energy. And after this, what happens, I can write down, you can follow also this phase, but let me skip it. What happens is that the universe start approaching the minimum, and it will start oscillating around the minimum. So you will have trajectories doing like this and spiraling in the towards the origin. Okay, so this describes oscillations around the origin of the potential with an amplitude which decreases as a function of time. This again is a consequence of the Hubble expansion. So the energy is not constant because the universe is expanding. So eventually, the amplitude of this oscillation becomes smaller and smaller towards the origin. Okay, so this is the generic picture that one has in mind. And in this case, it's a bit more explicit because we can solve the equations. But we expect this to remain true also in other cases. Okay, let me point out something. You may be, so in this model, let me stress it once again, you inflate only in a region in which phi is much larger than the Planck scale, okay? You may be a bit dissatisfied in writing this kind of inequality because the Planck scale at the end it's thought to be the ultimate high energy scale. So postulated that something is much larger than the Planck scale may be a bit suspicious. Let me notice that two things. I will come back to this later on, but let me point out two things, right? First of all, this inequality is still compatible with the fact that the energy density is clearly much smaller than the Planck scale. Okay, so clearly this inequality, I cannot violate it, because if really rho becomes of order n Planck before, so this means that the curvature of space-time becomes of order n Planck. So this means that I'm really completely out of control of the effective field theory, so GR breaks down. But this has nothing to do with that inequality, because rho is given by the mass times phi. And for reasons that I will explain later, the mass in this model is constrained to be much smaller than the Planck scale, of order 10 to the 13 GeV, for reasons that I will explain. So clearly, this condition has nothing to do with the fact that the curvature of space-time becomes Planckian. Otherwise, this would be completely crazy. On the other hand, it's true that you may be a bit, this kind of inequality is to take into account, because the reason is that it's quite difficult to justify a potential of this simple form when phi becomes much larger than the Planck scale. The reason is that, in general, I expect in any effective field theory description to have operators, non-renormalizable operators, suppressed by a high energy scale. And usually, this high energy scale is at most of order the Planck scale. So in general, my potential, I expect, without far further knowledge, to include operators, non-renormalizable operators, suppressed by powers of the fundamental scale. And clearly, if I include these operators in the game, clearly this picture is completely wrong, because these operators becomes dominant in for phi larger than n Planck. So this is to say that either I have control of these operators, okay, and I know for some reason that they are not there, or I cannot use this potential to inflate. This for all n, basically. Okay. So I will come back a bit later to this issue, but let me add another point to the discussion. Okay, so the first point is that don't be so worried, in a sense. We are not saying that GR breaks down, because we are far from the Planckian regime for the curvature. The second point is that you need control of all the higher dimension operators in this regime. The third point, which is probably the most important, is that phi, or better, delta phi, the displacement of the inflaton during inflation, much larger than the Planck scale, has an important experimental consequence. Okay, so it's not something that we can discuss, it's natural, it's not natural. So this is completely equivalent, as we see, to observable gravitational waves. Okay, so we say something about this later, but that's why I think this discussion is very important. So the presence or not in the sky of gravitational waves at the level that is conceivable to measure is equivalent to an inflationary model in which the displacement of the inflaton during inflation is parametrically larger than the Planck scale. Okay? So in particular, this kind of model that we are describing, the simple quadratic potential, give rise to a sizable level of gravitational waves. We'll discuss this inequality later, but this to stress that this is a very important experimental question. Any question about this? I will come back a bit later also. Okay, so Let's come back a bit to the discussion about this quadratic potential, which I used as, just as a toy model, but everything is similar also in other models. So as we said, the value of phi is the value of phi at the end of inflation, which is of order the Planck scale, plus this constant velocity times t minus tf. Okay, so this is the value at the end of inflation, and we have a constant speed, so the displacement of the inflaton is linear in the time until the time at the end of inflation. So, well, the upper parameter is of order m phi over m Planck. So this means that the motion of the inflaton at the end of inflation, at the end of inflation, phi is of order m Planck. So h is of order m. So this means that in one Hubble time, I move by a Planck mass. Okay. So in one Hubble time, I move of the same order as this final value. So this means that if I am sufficiently far from the end of inflation, this value can be neglected. And basically, in first approximation, this is the expression for phi. So I can neglect this term. This allows me I'm looking at what the scale factor is doing, because we solve for the scalar field, but we don't know what the scale factor is doing as a function of time. But in this case, everything can be integrated. In particular, the Friedmann equation gives h squared equal to 1 over 3 m Planck squared times 2/3. Okay, here I just solved, I mean, this is just the potential energy, m squared times phi squared, and phi squared is m squared and Planck squared times the time, okay? So I can integrate this equation to give a of t. So a of t, in this case, is just given by so this is the evolution of a scale factor, which you see that it is a positive second derivative. Okay. Well, in general, you cannot so easily integrate the evolution of a scale factor. So it's more useful to describe this evolution in this way. So let's calculate this ratio, h dot over h squared. What is this? Well, this is the relative variation of h in one Hubble time. Okay, so it's how much h varies in one Hubble time. So this is very easy, because this is h squared. So if you use this expression, you get that this ratio is equal to 1 over m squared times t minus tf squared. Okay, so you see that this is small because, I mean, because this is the same thing which appears in the exponent. So if I am sufficiently far from the end of inflation, okay, usually this exponent is called n, big N. This is the number of e-folds, so it's the number of how many e of expansion I add until the end of inflation. So this exponent is always called n. And you see that this ratio is of order 1 over n. This means the following, that I should look at this expansion in the following way. So h is approximately constant. So the Hubble parameter is approximately constant. Up to corrections of order 1 over n. So at the end of inflation, all the picture is a bit murky, because h is not constant, the universe stops accelerating, so it's a bit complicated. But if I am sufficiently far from the end of inflation, so n is largish, this number is small, so h is approximately constant. So I have an exponential evolution, an exponential expansion with almost constant age. So this is what we said. So we are close to a De Sitter expansion. At least sufficiently far from the end of inflation, I can approximate my expansion of the universe as De Sitter. I mean, h is constant, almost constant in one apple time. So this will remain true in all the models. Maybe I don't have an explicit expression like this, but what will remain true is that h is almost constant, so up to corrections, which becomes large at the end of inflation. Okay, so, well, a good question before is to ask, okay, but let's be a bit more quantitative. So inflation, so how much inflation do I need? Okay, so in the sense, we said that I need a double dot to be positive, but I mean, it's not that I need it to, for an instant. I need a phase of acceleration so that my problems with initial conditions that we're discussing are solved. So let's, for example, make an estimate of how much inflation I need. So let me draw again the diagram that I was showing before. The chalk is somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I turn to green. So this is the diagram as I was showing before. In log scale, I have a given wavelength, and then I have the Hubble length, which is almost constant during inflation, and then it starts increasing. Okay, this again H inverse, and a given scale. Okay, so let's first of all calculate what is the total duration of inflation that I need. So to do so, let's imagine that I am at the end of inflation. So in this picture, I'm just assuming that after inflation, I just have, for example, radiation dominance. So there is no transition. I just abruptly go from inflation to radiation dominance. So at this point, I can calculate the ratio that we were talking before. So the ratio between the Hubble scale at the end of inflation, taking into account the expansion up to now, compared to the present Hubble scale. So this, so forget about inflation. This is the number of disconnected regions that I have at the beginning of radiation dominance. Okay, so I calculate this ratio. So there are various refined ways to estimate it using entropy conservation and so on. But to get a very rough estimate, let's assume that we are in radiation dominance until now, which is not true, but it's a reasonable approximation. So this ratio goes like T0 over T at the end of inflation, so if you want the maximum temperature of radiation dominance, okay, you can check by yourself, assuming radiation dominance. So let me put a very high number for this temperature. Let's put TE to be 10 to the 15 GeV. This is basically the maximum temperature that you can imagine, but it can be very different, but this is just to give an idea. So this ratio is of order 10 to minus 28. Okay, so let me repeat what this ratio is. Is the ratio between the Hubble size at the beginning of radiation dominance and the present Hubble horizon. Okay, so this is the quantity that I have to solve. So So if I don't have inflation, this is really a problem. I have 10 to 28 disconnected regions forming my present apple volume. Now I want inflation to solve these problems. How does it work? Well, H, as we said here, is almost constant. Okay, so I can take it to be constant during inflation, first approximation. But A is exponentially expanding with, again, H almost constant. So I have a quasi-exponential expansion. So clearly, the number of, so how much expansion do I need so that all the modes go back into the Hubble radius? Or if you want, how much expansion do I need during inflation so that our present horizon go back into the Hubble radius? Okay, this is, so in this way, all these many disconnected regions, they come back to the same inside the Hubble radius. I need something which is the log of this quantity. So I need a number of e-folds, which is the number, the log of this huge quantity. And I get something like 64 in this example. Okay? So I need an exponential expansion for at least 60 e-folds, so that all the disconnected regions at the beginning of radiation dominance come back into the Hubble radius. Clearly, I can have many, I mean, inflation can be as long as you like in the past. Okay, this will only add additional, I mean, we solve the problems even better if you want, but it is the minimum amount that I need. Clearly, this number depends a bit on the details, depends on the reheating temperature, depends on what happens between inflation and radiation dominance. You will have an exercise in which you estimate a bit better these numbers, but everything depends, this number depends logarithmically on these details. So you can get down to 40 or something like this, but still the order of magnitude is over the 60 or something. In this diagram, there is a, so I drew here the present Hubble horizon. Okay. I can draw another line, which is much shorter. So it's a short wavelength in the present universe. So why I'm drawing, what is this second line? Well, in principle, the present universe is sensitive to all the scales up to the present Hubble horizon. Okay. So in principle, if I do experiments, I'm sensitive to the initial conditions of all the scales smaller than the Hubble horizon. Still, clearly, life is not so simple. If I talk about the very short scales, then the gravitational evolution is so complicated that I have no idea how to trace back to the initial conditions. So cosmological observations are only relevant when I talk about sufficiently large scales, so that the evolution is not so severe that I have some idea how to relate to the initial conditions. Okay. So otherwise, if I take a scale of order Justin, it's difficult to relate to the initial conditions during inflation, although in principle it's possible. So just to have an idea, there will be a scale such that at shorter scales, it's very difficult to reconstruct the initial conditions. So just to have an idea, let me call this observable window. So in a sense that these are modes which are sufficiently large that a cosmological observation can tell me something about the initial conditions set during the inflationary era. What happens at shorter scales is, in principle, there, but it's very difficult to reconstruct. So cosmological observations are sensitive to a period of inflation, which is not the last, because modes which are short, they exit the Hubble radius and come back soon after. So cosmological observations are sensitive to modes which are between the Hubble radius and the scale, which, I mean, clearly it depends on the accuracy of observation and your assumption, but let's put a number. So the present Hubble horizon, let's take it to be 3,000 megaparsec, while this other scale, we can take it to be, I don't know, 0.1 megaparsec, something like this. I mean, it can even be shorter, but it cannot be very, very, very short. So this tells me that of these 64 e-folds of inflation, I have an observational handle on, let's say, the log of this ratio, which is of order 10. Okay, so when you think about inflation, you have to think about this, okay, the total duration of inflation can be very, very large. We have no idea. The last 60, let's say, e-folds are related to modes which are observable in the present universe. And there is an observable window of, let's say, 10 e-folds, which is reliably studied through cosmological observations. Okay? Because these are modes which are sufficiently long to be studied and traced back to the initial conditions. Okay. Okay, so okay, before going on, if there are no questions, I just need to write a few formulas. Mm-hmm. Fine. Okay, so we made this treatment for the simplest case of a quadratic potential. Now let me write formulas which are general, which are more general. So let me say something about the so-called slow roll approximations. So this example tells you what is the logic. The logic is that if the potential is sufficiently flat, I expect that the pull from the potential will be compensated by the Hubble friction, so that I reach a stationary phase of accelerated expansion. So in a more generic case, let's see what this implies. So I have my two equations. Okay. And this is what is called the slow roll approximation. The slow roll approximation is equivalent to neglect this term and this term in the equation. Okay. So we said that this is because otherwise there is no inflation. I need this kinetic energy to be much smaller than the potential energy. Otherwise, I don't have inflation. And at the same time, I expect like in this example, that phi dot is almost constant. So I have a limiting speed that I reach, like in this phase diagram, and the acceleration is small compared to the other terms in the action. Okay? So if this is true, this set of equations reduces to a much simpler one. Phi dot equal to minus v prime over 3h and h squared. So clearly the system here is much, much simpler. But clearly it is not true in general. So what are the conditions such that I can do this approximation? What are the conditions that allows me to make these approximations? Okay, so this is important because these conditions will set inequalities for the inflaton potential that we have to satisfy to allow for a phase of inflation. Okay, let's see what are the conditions. So let's start from the second one. Okay, so I have to impose that the kinetic energy is much smaller than the potential energy. Well, you can use, but if the second is true, the kinetic energy is given by the formula up there. So this is equivalent to this. Okay, so if the draw conditions are true, this is equivalent to this. And this brings me to the definition of the epsilon parameter, which is defined in this way. Okay, and I need this parameter to be much smaller than one to have an inflationary phase. A useful exercise that you can do is to check using this simple formula that epsilon can also be related to another quantity. Epsilon actually is equal to minus h dot over h squared. Okay, it's a simple exercise. We have just to use this formula to verify that the quantity that I was calculating before here, okay, in this model, so the typical variation of h in 1 hour time is given by epsilon. So this means that epsilon small means that with good approximation, h can be treated as constant. So I have an exponential expansion with constant Hubble parameter up to corrections of order epsilon. So epsilon is the typical corrections to the sitter. So I have the sitter up to corrections of order epsilon. Notice that h dot is always negative, okay, in this, I mean, using this Lagrangian, you can easily check that h dot is always negative, so that epsilon is always positive, as it is clear also by the other definition. So epsilon is a positive point. What is the other condition that I have to impose? Well, let me do it here. So I have everything in the same blackboard. So the second inequality that I want to use, I want to impose that this term in the equation of motion is negligible compared to the other two. So phi double dot is of order using, I mean, if this approximation is correct, is approximated by this dot, because this is the expression of phi dot. Now, this expression, so h is almost constant, okay, up to correction of order epsilon. So let me treat this as a constant, because I know that anyway its variation is small. But there is still also the variation coming of the first derivative of the potential. This is of order v double prime times phi dot over h. Okay, so the variation in times of v prime is v double primes times phi dot, and there is this h. So I forget about factors of order one. So, which I can also write again using the first formula as this. Okay. And these, we need these to be much smaller than v prime, in the sense that otherwise I cannot neglect it in this equation. So this implies that this ratio must be small, okay? This ratio must be much smaller than one. In other words, the mass of the inflaton must be much smaller than the Hubble rate during expansion, during inflation. And this brings me to the definition of the second Zorro parameter, eta. Which is defined in this way. And again, also this must be much smaller than one. Okay, so these two definitions are quite important because all the predictions of inflation will depend on these two parameters, epsilon and eta. Notice that eta can be positive or negative, while epsilon is always positive. Now, these are conditions which are necessary for the slow roll phase to take place. So these are conditions that I have to impose on my inflaton potential to have an inflationary phase. Okay, before taking a short break, let me say something about how difficult it is to get to satisfy these conditions. Okay, so we spend 30 years in physics beyond the standard model to justify why the Higgs mass is small compared to the Planck scale. This is the infamous hierarchy problem. So I think we know a lot about how to make a potential flat, no? Because if you want, the hierarchy problem is how to control the flatness, if you want, the flatness of the Higgs potential compared to the Planck scale, okay? So this is, we are facing a similar problem. We want the derivatives of the potential to be sufficiently small to allow for a slow roll phase. So let me ask, what are the tools, the symmetries that one can use to make a potential for a scalar sufficiently flat? Okay, so one is a shift symmetry. The second? So a shift symmetry for sure it's a good candidate. So if I have a symmetry phi goes in phi plus constant, okay, this symmetry does not allow for any potential, because any potential breaks this symmetry, okay? So for sure this cannot be the end of the game, because otherwise I have a completely flat potential, but it's a good starting point. I can look at at what is called a pseudo Goldstone boson. So a Goldstone boson is a scalar that has an exact shift symmetry. So it's a massless scalar because it has a shift symmetry. If I break this symmetry a bit, I can get something, I can get a sufficiently flat potential. What is the second one? I mean, the second way to keep a potential flat? It's a symmetry which makes a potential flat. So what do we expect to see at LHC? Supersymmetry, no? So the other possibility is supersymmetry. Supersymmetry is a good way to keep a potential flat because, as you probably know, non-renormalization theorems says that the superpotential of a supersymmetric theory is not renormalized, does not receive quantum corrections. So if I write a potential which is sufficiently flat, to start with, relative correction will not spoil it. And in particular, if I start with a completely flat direction, this will remain flat. Okay. So these are the two symmetries that I can use to enforce to by symmetry that my inflaton potential is sufficiently flat. Now, why these are not enough? Okay, so this is not the end of the game, unfortunately. So to make a compelling model of inflation, these symmetries are not enough. Let me just briefly explain why they have problems. They both have some problem that you have to face. The first, let me write a potential for a pseudo-Nambu Goldstone boson, which is a scalar in which there is an approximate shift symmetry which is slightly broken, okay? This, for example, I mean, a typical example of a pseudo-Nambu Goldstone boson is the pion also, okay? Yes, the pion is a pseudo-Nambu Goldstone boson of the chiral symmetry and the axion of the Pacioli Quinn symmetry. And in both cases, the potential is of the form okay, where f is the breaking of the is the scale associated to the spontaneous breaking of the symmetry, which is the lambda QCD for of order lambda QCD for the pion, and we don't know for the axion. And lambda is associated to the scale which breaks explicitly the symmetry. In the case of the axion is lambda QCD. In the case of the pion, it's a bit smaller because it's related to the quark maxis. It's not so far, but it's related to the quark maxis. Now, so in general, a pseudo-number Gaussian boson has a potential of this form. So you can say, okay, fine. You see that if lambda is sufficiently small, which may be the case, for example, for the axion, there is a huge separation between lambda and f. I can do it, but notice, let me check. Let's check if these conditions are satisfied. What are the implications? Well, you can easily see that lambda drops if you take this ratio, and you need f to be much larger than the Planck scale. So this is the condition that you need. Notice this is the reason why it's not so simple, because justifying a scale of breaking of the symmetry larger than the Planck scale is not so easy. In particular, this is true, for example, in the case of the axions. It's difficult to justify why there are no terms breaking the symmetry suppressed by the Planck scale. Again, the terms I was talking about before. The reason is that usually the conventional wisdom is that gravity does not respect global symmetries, so that it's difficult to justify why these kind of terms are not there, suppressed by the Planck scale. And clearly, in this regime, these terms are completely unsuppressed. So for the axion, okay, they give some contribution, but f is much smaller than the Planck scale usually, and these terms may be very suppressed if they are there. But in this regime, I need a control of these terms, which is not easy to justify in the presence of gravity. So inflation with the pseudo-number Gaussian boson is not completely satisfactory, although there are models in which these problems are circumvented, but it's not that it comes to your lap. It's not so easy. Why supersymmetry is not the end of the game? Why supersymmetry has some problems? Well, the reason is that supersymmetry is not the end of the game. If supersymmetry is included in a theory with gravity, is lifted to supergravity. Okay. So, and the supergravity potential is very complicated. So let me write down some formula just to. Okay, before writing the formula, what the point is that although in supersymmetry the potential can be protected to be very flat, this is not true in the presence of supergravity corrections. Okay, so in the limit and Planck goes to infinity, these corrections go away. K is the Keeler potential, W is the superpotential, and L is defined as these are derivatives related to the fields. It's not important, the details. I just want to make the point, but the details are irrelevant. So what I'm trying to stress is that, you know, all these terms suppressed by the Planck scale comes when you include the supersymmetry in the concept of supergravity. Now, usually these terms are not very important because they're suppressed by the Planck scale. So at LHC, you don't care about these kind of terms. But for inflation, you have to care because, for example, you see that all these conditions are M Planck squared enhanced. So clearly, you need to care about these terms. And in particular, for example, let me look at this term, for example. So K is the Keeler potential, which, first of all, we have no idea what it is. It can be renormalized. It has no special properties in general. But if you take a conventional Keeler potential of the form phi dagger phi, okay, this term, you see, it's an exponential in front of the whole thing. So if this gives the potential V, it's easy to convince yourself that this term gives eta of order 1. This sometimes is called the eta problem in supergravity. So the bottom line is that if I take a flat direction in supersymmetry, so I'm very happy because as a starting point is perfect. I have a flat direction, then I can lift it a bit. But if I take this flat direction and I go to supergravity, I have n planks of square suppressed corrections from supergravity, and these are enough to spoil the flatness of the potential and to ruin, in particular, this eta condition, eta much less than one condition. So the bottom line is that we have tools to protect the flatness of a potential because we studied a lot how to protect a scalar from getting large deviation in the flatness of its potential. But the problem is that in inflation, we are talking about M Planck square suppressed corrections. So these kind of corrections are important, and neither of these two candidates solve completely this problem. So it's true that maybe we are on the good track, maybe you just need some additional fine tuning, who knows. But I just want to stress that it's not that I give you a potential and there is enough symmetry that that these conditions are completely generally realized. Okay. Any question about this? About the eta problem, if. Good point. It's a bit more complicated, but you still have problems also in this case. With this, I didn't mean that there is no good theorem, no? I'm just saying that it's not as easy as it seems. For example, you can consider the terms, you can consider cancellation, particular. For example, one thing is to put the two things together. If you put the two things together, then I think you can do it. But still, it means that you have to work hard. It's not that, this is just to stress that if you take a generic theory and you take a potential, in general, this will not inflate, because these are conditions which are extremely hard to realize. And even imposing symmetries is not so simple. Then you can work a bit more using various tools. But this is the reason why people are looking for the inflaton. It's not that it comes on your lap as free. Okay, let's pause for 10, 15 minutes. A little bit later.